At the Overland Park Farmers Market, after you buy your veggies from the local farmers, you can have them chopped by a professional, a guy who's known as the vegetable butcher. And right now, he's sitting here in the studio with a freshly picked zucchini. Okay, so he's chopping it just like into medallions, careful where to place his fingers for obvious reasons. The knife is rather sharp. What you might expect someone carving meat, perhaps. I don't know. Tony, now he's switched to cutting it longwise, which I think is maybe more of a skill. Tony, yes, what are you doing and why are you doing it that way?
Yes, ma'am. So one of the first things I like to do if I'm cutting any kind of round or cylinder vegetables to top and tail it. So I'm going to cut the kind of root end, if you will, or the vine end. And then the other end off, and that just gives you a flat surface. And then cutting one of the rounded sides off kind of gives us a surface that isn't going to rock around on us, and we can really cut some nice matchsticks, maybe, if you want to dip your zucchini in hummus or just eat it raw, which has been very popular at the farmer's market.
People have been really requesting the matchsticks.
Yes, absolutely, and that's one of the great things that we do there. For free to cut people's fruit and vegetables up, maybe for them to just walk around and eat right then and there at the market.
So what am I missing in my life if I cut my zucchini entirely into round medallions because I don't know how to do the matchsticks?
Absolutely nothing. So one of the things I really do enjoy doing with zucchini is cutting it into, instead of those medallions being just straight across, doing a nice oblique cut, real thick, maybe a quarter inch or even half an inch thick.
So it's kind of like rounded on the sides and then diagonal. That flat end is kind of...
Yeah, and so these are actually great to grill even. You can drizzle them with olive oil, salt, and pepper, and you get these really big, long, thick medallions that can be flipped really well on the grill. Or the matchsticks are great to just eat raw right then and there.
But so it's all about what you're using them for.
Absolutely.
And it's mostly cosmetic and sort of about handling it.
Sure.
Not so much about some taste thing. Are there vegetables where the way you cut them affects like the flavors that you're able to draw out in the subsequent steps?
Sure, absolutely. And some, even more importantly, maybe it's dangerous if you don't cut them a certain way. So rhubarb, the leaves are actually poisonous. So they have oxalic acid that can be very dangerous if consumed. So you want to make sure that you're cutting those leaves off and only eating the stalk, you know. So there are some important things to know for certain fruits and vegetables. Tomatoes, they're just great to cut right before you use them and not really let them hang out unless obviously they're going to be stewed or cooked in something like that. But
so that one's all about timing.
Absolutely.
I'm Gina Kaufman. Today's Vegetarian Food Show on KCUR Central Standard begins with a lesson from the vegetable butcher, Tony Bean. Okay, so keep teaching me how to make matchsticks. I'm intrigued. You've cut the zucchini into a more of a square shape by topping and tailing, as you've said.
Topping and tailing it, and then I cut the whole zucchini into about a 3-inch, 3 to 4-inch cylinder. From there, if you want to cut one side of that rounded zucchini off just a little bit, just to give you that flat edge, and then start cutting it down into about quarter inch thick wafers that are now rectangles, if you will. You can stack all those up, cut them up, get them all stacked up nice and neat, have 3 or 4 of them, and come down and cut about the same width that the thickness is, and you get these great little matchsticks.
Ta-da. Well, Tony, people are obviously very familiar with the idea of a butcher to carve meat. That seems like something where there's a right way to do it, and not everyone knows what it is. Do you think that that is really the case with vegetables?
I think some people, absolutely. You know, one of the other things that I do like to help people with is using the proper knife. You know, in our own kitchens, I hear a lot of people talk about, oh, wow, you're using such a big knife for that. I would use a paring knife, and it would take me all day. You know, so using the right knife is really going to help to speed things up and maybe have it be even a little safer.
That's pretty counterintuitive.
Yeah. So one of the things, I'm with the Culinary Center of Kansas City, which is all about education. And that's why they have me out there doing this service free, by the way, for everyone listening, if anyone would like to come. It is a totally free service. But they're all about education. And one of the things that they make sure to teach is a sharp knife is always going to be safer than a dull knife. Just, you're not going to have to press through the vegetable as hard. It's going to cut easier. And then on the off chance that you do cut yourself, it's going to be a much cleaner cut. It's not going to tear as much as more of a surgical slice, if you will.
You know, what are some of the most common requests for people who do want to have their vegetables chopped by you, the vegetable butcher?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, since it is such a seasonal thing at the market, you know, rhubarb has been really popular at the moment. That's obviously going to change. So, man, I guess it really would all depend on the season. And so far, just being the rhubarb, you know, cutting those into small pieces about the same size so that when people stew it first before they bake it in their pie or their cobbler, that it's going to cook at the same rate.
For people who haven't worked with rhubarb and have only consumed it like in pie form.
Yes, with plenty of strawberry.
It looks like pink celery.
That's a very, very accurate description. Pink, bitter celery. Very sour. I'm not a huge fan.
Has anything ever stumped you? Anything?
Yeah. Absolutely. I'm by no means all-knowing. I don't really care for rhubarb in my personal life, so I don't know much about it. So before I went and did my first week there, you know, I thought I'd really hit the books and start learning about a lot of that kind of stuff. And what I've kind of often found is the produce or things that I don't know about because I don't like it or because I haven't used it much, those are often the things that I kind of get more educated on because I don't know much about bananas, but I eat them every day. You know, something like the rhubarb, I didn't know really anything about because I don't eat it. I don't utilize it. So I need to learn it, you know, things like that.
Part of what you're doing when you're chopping up certain vegetables is making a judgment call about which parts you're using and what gets tossed.
Sure.
Either in the trash or the compost heap. Can you talk about that? I mean,
yeah,
because I think also when people work with new vegetables, you are not always sure.
Absolutely.
Which part am I eating here? I remember when fennel first became popular. I was looking at this thing. And there's like the bulb, there are the stalks, and there are the leaves. And I was like, so which
part
is
the
fennel?
Yeah. you know, that's a great question. And one of the things that I really like to ask people when I'm doing this service for them at the market is making sure that I know what they want out of it. If they're going to use it for a soup or eat it raw or whatever it might be. Broccoli is a prime example. I love broccoli stem. If you peel a broccoli stem, it's actually really sweet and can be eaten raw, unlike the florets can be eaten raw, but they kind of have a bitter raw taste to them. The stem's actually much sweeter.
And much smoother texture-wise.
Absolutely. And so things like that, a lot of people are having me like, hey, will you cut up this broccoli and just throw the stem out? And I can kind of tell them, I'll do whatever you want me to do. But you might be able to use this. Maybe we can try it right now. Or beet greens was a great example. We had a bunch of people buying these beets, and you had this great long bushy green that came off the top. They're like, well, I just want the beets. Well, if you're a fan of juicing or smoothies, you know, those beet tops and those beet greens could be great just to kind of add into that, or as a salad or cooking it in to stewed greens or something.
I want to talk about onions, because first of all, do you have tricks for not crying? I'm a serious onion crier.
Yeah, absolutely. the biggest thing that I've learned is contacts. There's like these great barriers that protect your eyes. I don't wear contacts, I should say. I found that out because I did once. I was like, oh, I'm not crying. This is incredible. But I've heard a lot of people talk about a sharp knife, you know. If your knife is really sharp, it's not going to bruise it. It's not going to pull out a lot of those juices that are making you cry. Other people say that, you know, it's that root end. And as long as you can cut that off and leave it and don't cut through it, you won't cry. And, you know, one thing I do know is it doesn't get better with time. It's not like, oh, I've cut so many that I don't cry anymore. I'm still an avid weeper of onions. But that's one of the big points that we pull out at the market is I tell people, you know, the Culinary Center has me here to cry so you don't have to. I will fall on that chef's knife and cut up your onion for you so you don't have to cry in your own home.
Are you able to keep going, though? Like, there are times
absolutely.
When I have to, like, step outside the house. Like, not just the kitchen, the house. I have to step
out
of the house.
Yeah.
Because I can't see through my tears.
Yeah. It can be really bad sometimes. One of the things that I do have here in the studio with me also is a leek instead of an onion. It's a great option for those who like that flavor. Because onions, I mean, it's one of the rare vegetables, the rare produce that is just, unless it's this crazy sweet onion from Holes, you're not going to eat it raw, you know. But it's in everything. And it just makes such great flavors in food when you're cooking it. And if you are a crier, a weeper, and you can't handle that, which is definitely understandable, a leek, you're not going to cry. It's going to be a little milder on the flavor. You could do most everything, even little leek rings, you know, cutting them into discs, breading them and frying them instead of onion rings, or, you know, putting it into a potato soup. A leek in potato soup is just perfect.
Will you do a leek demonstration?
Yeah.
Because this also, for me, gets at one of the other questions I have, which is, I think, kind of true with onions and kind of true with leeks, more so with onions.
Yeah.
Where does the peel end and the onion begin?
Sure. So for an onion, anything that's going to be that tough skin, it's almost that papery skin, I want to make sure I remove that. And one way easily to do that, I don't have an onion here, so we don't cry, but is if you cut the top off of your onion, and then, so we'll call that the North Pole, right? We've got the North Pole of the onion. We're going to cut that off. And then cut it through the North and the South Pole together. Now we've got two halves that have the little dangly roots on one end and a flat, no more North Pole on the other. From there, it's really easy to kind of look through the different layers of the onion and just pull off those single little layers that you need to skin it, right?
Right, but there's, I feel like, an in-between area between the papery and that just objectively, we're at the onion now. There's this in-between area.
And sometimes it's half and half. It might be good on part of the layer, but then be papery on the other.
Yeah,
you know?
And you think this is totally the onion now, but then you watch it, what happens to it in the skillet, and it turns into this, like, wilty, like, weird texture thing.
It's stuck in your tooth. I don't cry over a lost onion layer. If I'm going to, you know, when in doubt, maybe just peel one more layer and it'll be okay. Leeks are, I guess, kind of similar in that because you've got the greens. And
there's the papery part.
They're very woody. They don't cook down quite as easily. So a lot of times when I do use leeks, I kind of look to see where the natural split is in the stalk, where you've got the cylinder white bulb splitting and turning into a leaf. And I typically will cut around somewhere around there.
Okay, so the white at the base turns to an ever darkening green, and you have cut
just shy of that.
Yeah, like right about
where
at the light green part.
Sure. Yeah, and I mean, as people prefer, some people might like more of the green. I am not the biggest fan, so I will kind of stay around that mid-range. And just like with our onion,
so you like the moister,
it's a little more tender.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it'll cook down easier. I'll cut the root end off. And from there, depending on what you want, especially if you're replacing this with a sliced onion in a recipe, going ahead and cutting it in half.
You've cut it in half longwise.
Yep, longwise. Hot dog, if you will. And then from there, I mean, just really making sure we're going to tuck our fingers back.
Yeah,
the fingertips.
It.
Yep, knuckling it. And then we can just slice down. And what that does is gets us these beautiful...
I want to say something here because as a professional, you probably do this intuitively and don't
often
even think about it. But also, like, the trick, those quick chops that you were just doing.
Sure.
The trick to that is also the steady moving back of the fingers.
Yep.
The hand that's holding the vegetable, you're
the
sliding that
hand
back
yep.
as the knife moves back.
Yes, and that knife is resting on my knuckles.
Not fingertips.
Not fingertips, because you won't have fingertips long. But yeah, as long as you can kind of guide it on those knuckles, I know that I'm not going to cut my fingers.
Is it? Okay.
Yes, ma'am.
Is it different when you're chopping for a sandwich versus something else? Because the layering of vegetables on a vegetable sandwich, architecturally, for the sake of the sandwich, this is a delicate matter.
Absolutely. I mean, if you want tomato, one thing I absolutely hate is multiple tomatoes on a sandwich that are like cattywampusly stacked. So you, you take that bite and all of a sudden it shoots out that tomato slice.
This is every tomato I put on a
sandwich. Sure. And so one of the things I really like about the farmer's market is buying these great heirloom tomatoes that you can get these gigantic slices. The whole sandwich is one slice. That'd be perfect.
Well, Tony Bean, thanks for all of your advice this morning.
Absolutely. Good to be here.
I'm Gina Kaufman, and in just a minute, the food critics will be here on KCUR's Central Standard to talk about the tastiest, most original vegetarian dishes on local menus. Call 816-235-2888 with your recommendations. Pizzas loaded with veggies, sandwiches, chilled soups, nice pasta primavera, maybe a curry. 816-235-2888. We'll be right back. I'm Gina Kaufman. This is KCUR's Central Standard, and we're talking about vegetarian food with our food critics. We'll be taking calls from you at 816-235-2888. And what we're really hoping for are some exciting new discoveries. There are lots of vegetarian food options out there, and sometimes it's hard to think beyond the obvious. So we're going to get things started at a popular bar and hangout. It's a place where you might not expect to find a killer vegetable sandwich.
Among the old brick warehouses in the West Bottoms, you'll find The Ship, a historic cocktail lounge and restaurant which first opened downtown in 1935. From the outside, it is fairly unassuming. The weathered sign above the stairs is the only clue that there's a restaurant inside. In there, the lights are low and the space is tight. It's modeled to be like the inside of an actual ship, after all. The Ship is known as a place for comfort food. Meatloaf, burgers, barbecue, even a Cuban. The iconic Florida sandwich made with salami, pork, and ham. But The Ship has a twist on this classic, a vegetarian Cuban sandwich.
He really wanted to give everybody a really good, tight vegetable sandwich that had a great crunch and a gooey center. So they thought that, you know, they would think that they were eating something real meaty and you know, that really that's real heavy, but it isn't.
That's Ernie Locke, blues musician and head chef at The Ship. The KC native took the job there 2 years ago, after a 16-year stint in Tampa, Florida. He says he learned a lot about cooking while he was there.
I learned the use of a lot of gravies, and I learned the use of a lot of stuff to do with banana leaves, and cooking with banana leaves, cooking with plantains, stuff like that. I really got a really great tutelage in how to make rice really fun.
Ernie's Veggie Cuban isn't just the classic you know with a meat substitute. It's a completely different animal.
Then we get our vegetable medley, which today is fresh carrots, zucchini, red and green peppers, purple onions, and real thinly sliced Brussels sprouts. And then we get this sautéing and get it going.
Ernie cuts a French roll and puts a cream cheese and dill spread on one half and a half mustard, half mayonnaise spread on the other. He covers one side with Swiss cheese and pickles and toasts the bread to give it a satisfying crunch. Once the vegetables are sautéed and the cream cheese is melted, he spreads the veggies on one half.
We try to make it, we don't make them really spicy or anything, and the taste of the vegetables basically stand alone. One thing I have found out that if you put a lot of zucchini in it, it's a big thing and it places well on the sandwich. And zucchini is like a vehicle vegetable. It takes on the taste of all kinds of other vegetables.
The only thing left is to put the sandwich halves together, grab a cast iron weight, and press it like you would a panini. In case you haven't noticed, Ernie isn't really concerned with serving vegetarian food to fit a diet.
Instead of just, you know, oh, this is vegetarian, and this is good for you, and I'm just adding to your halo on your head. That's not what I'm really doing. And I just want people to get excited about eating vegetarian stuff just as much as they're excited about eating, you know, some smoked beef brisket.
The vegetable medley in the sandwich is a surprisingly filling alternative to the three meats in a traditional Cuban. The vegetables take a new taste in the sauté, and is served with freshly made coleslaw. Add an ice-cold lemonade, and it's like you're having lunch in Tampa.
That was our intern, Trevor Hook, trying the Veggie Cuban if that's not a contradiction in terms, at the Ship in the West Bottoms. He talked to Ernie Locke. And now let's get started on some more hot tips on great vegetarian options we might not know about on local menus. The food critics are here. Charles Ferruza, Mary Block, good morning.
Good morning.
We're also joined by a special guest critic, Lisa Murphy. She's a health coach, so she keeps an eye on the plant-based options on local menus. Hi, Lisa.
Hi, Gina.
So you all have a lot of exciting dishes to talk about, as do, I'm sure, our listeners, and they can call with them at 816-235-2888. But I love that today's lists range from high-end restaurants to really old-school vegetarian cafes to brand-new coffee shops, to Chinese restaurants, Ethiopian restaurants. There is a lot of variety here.
There really is. And, you know, a decade, I'm not sure we could say that, but now it's just part of everybody's regular diet. You don't have to ask for something vegetarian. It's just a dish without meat or fish or whatever.
So what about that assumption that it's all barbecue and meat in Kansas City?
You know, Gina, it's interesting because it is a lot about barbecue and meat in this town, but there are even barbecue restaurants where you can get not only vegetarian entrees, but vegan entrees as well. The vegan barbecue sandwich at the Char Bar is delicious.
Yeah. So, Lisa, you and Mary are both actually guiding us to the Char Bar. And I think, you know, a couple decades ago, people would have been really shocked to hear a barbecue place mentioned on a vegetarian food show. But here we are. Talk to me about what you both get at the Char Bar. And Lisa, tell me, so start off by telling us more about that sandwich.
I love, it's called the Jackknife, and they use jackfruit, smoked jackfruit, instead of pork or beef. And it's on some nice white bread with some fresh sliced avocado. And then depending on who's in the kitchen, it'll either be served with some pickled jalapenos or their jalapeno jam is my favorite. And it's delicious. Yeah.
You know, so tell me more, first of all, about jackfruit, because that is coming up a lot more on menus in general. And I don't know that much about it.
Jackfruit is used commonly as a meat substitute. It's actually a really large tropical fruit that can weigh up to 100 pounds, and I believe it's grown in Southeast Asia. Green jackfruit particularly has a stringy texture and consistency that's very, very similar to meat.
Mary, you get something else at the Char Bar. You get the roots and fruits dish.
I do. Goes really well with French fries. No, I'm kidding. It's root vegetables, beets, Brussels sprouts, roasted parsnip. It does have cheese. If you're vegan, you can ask for it without. And a blackberry wine vinaigrette. And it is a full meal. It's not a little, you know, dainty side salad.
It's not a condiment collection.
No, and it's
which
excellent.
Is what so many vegetarian dishes used to be. People took, you know, the olives and the lettuce and stuck that on a loaf of bread, called it a sandwich.
Exactly. The roasting of it really brings out all the flavors. No steamed vegetables. It's the great flavor.
And so, Charles, you also have what might not be the obvious choice for a vegetarian food show. You are directing us to Fogo de Chao.
Well, yes, because, you know, they do have probably.
So first of all, tell us about the restaurant.
Well, it's a Brazilian steakhouse with has the guys, what do they call them, churrascos, or the guys who bring the meat out and slice it in front of you. And so it's, you know, all about meat all the time, except they do have, I don't want to call it a salad bar. They call it a seasonal market table, which does have a large variety of meatless dishes, salads, and roasted vegetables, and other things, cheese plates, that if you go with a, which I'm assuming is a big part of their patronage, if you go with someone who is a vegetarian who, or a person who does eat meat, you could both be satisfied because there's really enough to fill both of you up, and nicely so.
That is, and I think for a lot of vegetarians, that can be the trick, going out to eat with friends who want to go someplace that you might not have a lot of options. So it's cool to know.
Right. I mean, back in the late 70s, early 80s, I worked for a macrobiotic vegetarian restaurant and was a macrobiotic vegetarian at that time. And the owner of the restaurant finally had to put chicken and beef on the menu because it's amazing the number of vegetarian women who date meat-eating men. You know, there is those, you know, mixed couples.
That's funny. Well, we are going to turn to a couple of callers at 816-235-2888 before getting back to some of our critics' recommendations that might be at places that are a little more expected. Let's talk with Al in Kansas City, Missouri. Al, good morning.
Good morning, guys. So I came to Kansas City in 1989, and there was almost nothing to choose from except venue on Main Street. And I loved it and then realized I didn't have the cash to continue. But there's a Sasha's downtown has now redefined itself as a place called Banksia, which has Australian origins. And they have meat pies, but they also have some great vegetarian items. And I had a spanakopita the other day. Now, it wasn't just a piece of spanakopita. It was, or a little thing of it. It was this rolled, monstrous puff pastry item filled with feta cheese and all the good things that are in spanakopita.
Usually spinach, right?
Yeah, right.
Yep.
Yeah, spinach and onions and so forth. And it was really good. And the place is just jamming right now. And they do have a number of... I can't remember the other vegetarian items because I think I ate too much of the spanakopita and totally destroyed my memory. But it's another place that you can also get something different and vegetarian.
Well, so, thanks, Al. Thanks.
Yeah.
And good Sasha's... Show. Now, I guess Banksia's is around the corner from the central branch of the public library. Isn't that?
Yeah.
That's the one?
That's a good marker.
Well, so as long as we're on the sort of cafe, coffee shop kind of tip, Lisa, Pirate's Bone. You have a recommendation at Pirate's Bone.
Oh, yeah. I love Pirate's Bone. I love what they're doing. It's a small, very small cafe. What is it? 59th Street, I mm-hmm. believe, right next to Chai Chai. And... they're turning
sort of off of the Brookside Strip.
Yeah, yeah. They're turning out 100% plant-based or vegan food that's delicious. And a couple of my favorites there, they make an activated charcoal waffle.
Okay, someone called in about this once, and I'm totally intrigued.
It is amazing. So if you think about just a regular waffle, although it's got charcoal in it, so it's the color of charcoal. Mm-hmm. Yes. Similar to an interesting example, but squid ink. You know how squid ink makes pasta black? It's the same thing. Perhaps it's the vegetarian vegan version of squid ink. It's really, really nice. And then I also...
And you put syrup on it?
Yeah. They have pure maple syrup that you can put on it. They also will dust a little powdered sugar on it. It's really delicious. They also make a beautiful beet burger. It's got beets in it, so it's a beautiful red color, and they serve that on a activated charcoal bun. So the colors are just amazing.
Cool. Well, and how does that beet burger taste?
Like beets. It's delicious.
Is it a hot burger?
Yeah, yeah, like a veggie burger.
What would be the binder for the beets?
Well, it's vegan, so it would not have egg.
Right.
I'm not sure what he's using to bind it,
glue?
To be honest.
I'm sure not
glue.
Glue's
not vegetarian, Charles. Ground flax seed is often used as a binder. Yeah.
Well, so... that's an intriguing new veggie burger, the beet burger at Pirate's Bone. Tell me also about Cafe Gratitude. That's been around here for a few years, and this is maybe more along the lines of what people imagine when they think about a vegetarian cafe.
Right. Cafe Gratitude is also 100% plant-based or vegan. They also are 100% organic, which is kind of nice, and they have been around for a while. They also do not use soy products or meat analogs. So when you go to Cafe Gratitude, you know you're going to get 100% plant-based whole foods, which is kind of nice.
Do you have a favorite dish there?
You know, I love their brunch. They serve brunch on Saturdays and Sundays, and they have a vegan version basically of Eggs Benedict, which is some really nice gluten-free bread with sautéed spinach, cashew, hollandaise sauce, and it's served with roasted potatoes. It's really satisfying.
So there's no imitation meat on
it? No, they do not use imitation meat there.
Okay.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So that's Cafe Gratitude, and it's pretty well known for the way you order.
Yes. Their menu items are all titled something like, I am blessed, I am beautiful.
Affirmations.
I am Thank you, Mary. Affirmations.
That you, correct. In order to get your food, you have to say these things.
You know, they're not super militant about it. I often just say I'll have the nachos. But if you want, you can say I am grounded. I am blessed. Yeah. Can be kind of fun.
And so then returning to this idea of things that you've got to talk about if you're talking about a vegetarian food show, the veggie burger is an institution. It used to be that if you went out for a veggie burger, you would get a frozen veggie burger like you can get at the store. People, most restaurants now make their own in-house veggie burgers. There's a lot of variety.
Yes. Howard's Cafe, Craig Howard has one that is vegan because he makes his own cheese.
I think you can ask for it vegan without the cheese, yes. But the burger itself is vegan.
Right. It's made with green lentils, red beans, rehydrated porcini, brown rice, quinoa. It's even got a vegan Worcestershire sauce. And it's really good. He worked hard to perfect it so it didn't fall apart. Other ones that have been around for a while, Room 39 has a great veggie burger people love. Black Dirt just started serving lunch, and they have a interesting-looking veggie burger on their menu I'm anxious to try.
Any other veggie burger recommendations?
I was hesitant to mention this because it's a large corporate restaurant, but I love the veggie burger at the Yard House. It's vegan, and it's really, really good.
Can you describe it?
Yeah, it's got quinoa, and I believe they might use Gardein, which is a brand name of vegan protein. But it's just, it's on a really great bun. It comes with all of the condiments. Their fries are delicious. It's a really nice vegan option for a burger.
Can we put a shout out too for an old school kind of veggie burger, Eden Alley? It's a classic. And, you know, it doesn't taste anything like a hamburger, but it tastes like.
That's not always the point.
Yeah. It tastes like what you think a veggie burger is supposed to taste like.
Well, and it's got a lot of pickles on it, which is one of its distinguishing characteristics.
And on their late night menu, Corvino has a mushroom burger that's a vegetarian version of what is sort of become their famous house burger.
Let's talk to Stephanie in Independence, who's calling us at 816-235-2888. Hi, Stephanie.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What do you want to recommend?
I would like to recommend the Russell at 31st and Main.
Or what dish tell us.
Yeah, they have a delicious tomato and burrata cheese toast. They serve it on a grilled sourdough. It's to die for.
So what do you think distinguishes this particular dish? I mean, sort of like the crustini trend is really big. It's at a lot of restaurants. What makes this one at the Russell really jump out to you?
Well, for one thing, it's just so fresh. You can taste the freshness in every bite. Additionally, it comes with chips that you can substitute the side salad, which has a really good light vinaigrette on it. That it's just, everything was really, really good. They also have a really good roasted root vegetable salad.
Roasted root vegetable
salad.
That
has a maple vinaigrette. Mm-hmm.
Did you say maple vinaigrette?
Yes, it's delicious.
Hmm. Well, thank you. Thanks for that call, Stephanie.
Sure.
You know, so Stephanie is talking about the Russell, and again, we're talking about a new restaurant that isn't known for being vegetarian. In fact, I'm pretty sure that chef is known somewhat for the grill, the use of the grill. Are there other places like that? I mean, on our lists, I'm also seeing the Antler Room and the Rieger.
Well, both those restaurants have a big vegetarian section, whether it's vegetarian pasta. At the Antler Room, they always have some incredibly creative vegetable dishes. Right now, they have one with cauliflower and avocado pea puree, preserved vegetables, and a Korean dressing, which is, there isn't one vegetarian dish on that menu I wouldn't rave about. And the Rieger has a lot of pasta dishes, some vegetarian, some not, but they always have some great vegetables, one right now with a local tofu.
We'll come back to that. Call 816-235-2888 with your favorite vegetarian dishes in town. I'm Gina Kaufman with the Food Critics, and we'll be right back. I'm Gina Kaufman. This is KCUR's Central Standard, and I'm talking about vegetarian food with Charles Frouza, Mary Block, and health and wellness coach Lisa Murphy. Before we pick back up where we left off, I do want to take a moment to acknowledge that a lot of people in the food world are thinking about Anthony Bourdain this morning, and we're probably all still wrapping our minds around the news of his death, but Charles, you met Anthony Bourdain and ate a meal with him when he came here to do an episode.
I actually met him twice, and yes, I did take him to the Savoy Grill, or I should say he probably took me, and his, you know, entourage, and a hilarious guy, really funny, really smart, and I think it's a national tragedy that we've lost him, because he really, I think, demystified a lot of food dishes and food preparation.
I agree. Restaurant culture, what happens behind the scenes in a restaurant.
Right.
About a decade ago, he put out a list of 13 places you have to eat before you die. And Oklahoma Joe's, now Joe's Kansas City, was on that list. And it really put them on the map.
Well, I know that there's a lot more to say about it. And I'm sure a lot of people will be saying all of that. But has he been an influence on either of you?
Oh, I thought his book, Kitchen Confidential, really captured what it was like to work for a restaurant.
And I loved his shows. It was like you could go to those places without getting on an airplane.
Well, yes. We're all going to do a lot more processing of this, I'm sure. But it's good to hear about that Kansas City connection and, remember his visit.
He loved the Savoy Grill, the way it looked. He was not so entranced by the food. So, to put it mildly, yeah.
Well, we are going to return to our vegetarian food conversation here, and you can join that conversation at 816-235-2888. When we went to the break, we were talking about the Rieger, and Mary, you were just saying something about their tofu dish.
Yes, there's a local tofu company, Grilled Chun Co., tofu, and a lot of restaurants are using their tofu now. He has it in two different versions. One is a tofu puree, which I recently discovered out of town, and I decided it was my new favorite thing to eat, and it has a lot of vegetables on it as an appetizer at the Rieger. But he's also doing a grilled tofu, and it has 7 grains, roasted mushrooms, and chimichurri. So a lot of people don't think of Howard Hanna as a cook who does a lot of vegetarian food, but he does it really well.
I would agree with Mary, and I love that tofu dish. And it's vegan, so it's completely plant-based. And I also love one of his side dishes or starters. It's a turnip salad that's got raw and roasted turnips. It, as ordered on the menu, it's in miso butter, but they'll make a vegan version for you. Again, just highlighting fresh, and they're local, because I've been sitting out there having cocktails before when the farmer has walked in with a big bag of turnips. I mean, how cool is that? Just highlighting fresh, local produce. It doesn't have to be, you know, anything that you feel deprived about.
We should also add that turnips are one of the great underrated vegetables.
I agree, Charles. I agree.
Say more about that. Let's all hail the turnip for a moment. <Yeah. laughs>
Well, I mean, it's a root vegetable that was considered earthy and not very interesting for a long time. But boy, you could really do a lot with turnips, especially roast them.
Yeah.
They're delicious
roasted.
They
are delicious.
Well, and radishes I would put in the same category.
Oh, sure.
Now the radishes are so gorgeous. When you see them on a salad, you just want to have it.
That's right.
And what about messenger ibis? Mary and Lisa, this is another one you are both recommending.
So they have a lot of toasts, as you mentioned, Gina. That's a thing. And their toasts, like with avocado and or egg, are wonderful. But they recently put on the menu a bowl, and it's got black rice, kimchi, roasted vegetables. It has an egg, but you could easily leave it out, with gochujang, which is a Korean spicy paste, and spring onions. And it's just a delightful way to start the day.
It is a delicious dish, but I love they have a couple of purely vegan options as well. Their pancakes are one of the most decadent things, I believe, on any Kansas City menu right now. They've got house-made, the flour is freshly milled in-house. They come with, I believe, house-made pecan butter and a coconut milk-based caramel. They're, Charles, you would love them.
That sounds really fattening. I'll take one right now.
They also have, as Mary mentioned, a fancy, they call it avocado tartine. It's a fancy avocado toast that comes with an egg. But if you ask nicely, it's not on the menu, they will substitute a tofu.
Nicely, though.
You have to ask nicely. They will substitute the egg with a tofu scramble, and it's really tasty.
So this is Messenger Ibis. Charles, you are recommending Bowlings.
You know, Bowlings has always kind of been, at least for the last three decades, they've at least tried to accommodate vegetarians over the years, either with vegetarian dumplings or some kind of vegetarian-friendly dish. And they've gotten more so over the years. And you know, I love their pineapple fried rice anyway, because it's such a weird dish. And it's served, of course, in a fresh pineapple. And
yeah, points for presentation.
Absolutely. And points for, like, absurd tropical presentation. But it's a delicious dish. And I love their baby bok choy dish with garlic. It's, you know, a vegetarian dish cannot have too much garlic as far as I'm concerned.
And Mary, just quickly, you have an off-menu recommendation at another Chinese restaurant in town.
Princess Garden has a harvest vegetable dish, and it's a riff on their harvest pork. And I love it. I wouldn't care if I got any of the meat dishes. It's got a garlic, ginger, black bean sauce and lots of fresh vegetables. It's a real treat.
Let's turn back to some of our callers. We've got Sharon calling us from Kansas City. Hi, Sharon.
Hi. I wanted to mention Urban Cafe. It's on 44th and Troost. And I just tuned in, so I'm not sure if it's been mentioned before, but they have really veggie options for almost all of their dishes. My favorite is a scramble bowl, kind of a quinoa bowl. It has quinoa and you can have tofu or eggs, and I think you could probably even have egg whites if that was fitting with your diet. I always have tofu, and it has veggies in it. It's really just delicious. And they also have just, I think, the best smoothies in town. You can choose your ingredients and as many as you want, and I usually have spinach and kale and banana with ginger and blueberries. Anyway, so with those two dishes, I really have fulfilled most of my dietary needs for the day.
Well, thank you so much, Sharon. And I wonder if anyone else has something to say about, anyone want to add anything about Urban Cafe?
Well, I want to mention that they are moving south.
Oh, I didn't know that.
To 55th and Troost.
Okay.
To a much bigger location, we should say.
I haven't been there in a while, but they used to have an amazing vegan dish on their menu. They were chickpea tacos. And they were ground up chickpeas in a fresh tomato salsa, and they served them in little baby gem lettuce cups. So they were vegan and gluten-free. They were really nice and fresh.
Let's talk to Betsy, also calling us from Kansas City. Hi, Betsy.
Hi, how's it going?
Good. How about you?
Good. Yeah, I've been a vegetarian for about 4 to 5 years now. And one thing that I try to find is places that are like a little bit cheaper, maybe, because sometimes if you go to a restaurant, you're going to get a certain price range. And one thing that I really love is the falafel hummus sandwich at Jerusalem Cafe in Westport. It's just, you can't go wrong with it. It's just really great and tasty.
Any other top picks that you want to mention before we say goodbye?
Yes. If you go across the street to McCoy's, because I love beer, you can get the vegan masala. And it's basically a mixture of roasted vegetables with this, like, brown sauce, like a garam masala sauce. And it's a very savory, like, gravy. And that's something that, as a vegetarian, I've really missed is, like, that kind of gravy-like taste. And they do a really great job with making an entree dish with a variety of vegetables and that really tasty sauce.
So that's at McCoy's, and you have it with a beer?
Yes. Oh, yes. Yeah, and McCoy's does a great. They are always kind of changing up their vegetarian and vegan options, and it's really great to see more restaurants in the Kansas City area, a place really known for its barbecue. It's great to see them start to incorporate some veggie-friendly place things that I can choose from when I go with, you know, my friends that aren't veggie lovers.
Well, thank you so much, Betsy, and we're going to quickly talk to Lisa in Independence. We haven't gotten much outside the KC Metro. Little central part of the metro. But Lisa, do you have a recommendation for us from Independence?
Yes, I go to the Happy Greek. It's over on 23rd Street. And they have a plate that's called the Hercules plate. And it's hummus with pita bread. Dolmas, I think I'm saying that right.
The dolmas,
stuffed
yeah.
Grape leaves. Spanica pita. And they often, too, they have a soup of the day. And they have like a roasted red pepper that is to die for.
A roasted red pepper soup with the Hercules plate.
Can I ask, are the stuffed grape leaves or the dolmas, are they vegetarian?
Yes.
Okay.
They usually are.
Well, thanks so much, Lisa. We've heard about an Indian dish at McCoy's, and we've heard about the Greek plate, but the Indian restaurants like often have many, many vegetarian options. And we're also getting a recommendation for Blue Nile, which is an Ethiopian restaurant. Ethiopian restaurants, too, would have typically many vegetarian options.
They do, Gina, particularly vegan. And I do love the veggie combo plate at the Blue Nile Cafe down in the River Market. You get to choose from four of their vegetarian entrees, which are all vegan. So you normally there's a lentil, a couple different vegetables, and it's served with endless injera bread, which is a gluten-free bread made from high-protein teff grain. So it's a really healthful meal.
And before we go, I do want to make sure we fit in that this is not a show that's been particularly geared toward vegans, but you do have a vegan ice cream recommendation.
Oh my gosh, I was so thrilled when I learned that Betty Ray's has three non-dairy options for ice cream. And they've got a chocolate one that's made from a coconut cream base, vanilla, which has got bananas and avocados in it, and then they always have a non-dairy sorbet as well. It's really decadent.
Charles Jasper's made your list as we return to our maybe less obvious choices.
Well, they do that great spaghetti dish with fresh broccoli, garlic, and extra virgin olive oil. And, sometimes you just need a non-meat pasta dish.
You know, in pasta dishes, a pasta primavera can go very right and very wrong. But that is, when done well, that is just a beautiful summer dish.
I agree.
Pasta with veggies.
Absolutely. And you can go to the Asian front again and do vegetable ramen. You still have your noodles,
right,
but the stocks are really rich with mushroom or whatever.
And they use mushroom stock a lot to make the ramen bowls, and that makes it a very, very satisfying.
And what about Happy Gillis?
So Happy Gillis always has toasts. Right now they have one where they use Ibis bread, which is my favorite, and they toast it. And it's called Greens and Eggs. It's got sautéed greens, garlic, goat cheese, a soft egg, and Duca spice. And it's lovely. They also do salmon toast if you want, and other things that you could get anything you want there.
Let's talk to Alexis very quickly before we go. Alexis, you wanted to get in a recommendation for a spicy vegetarian dish.
Yes, I always get the black bean tofu at Blue Koi. It has jalapenos, bell peppers, and it's always spicy, but it's not too spicy. And their vegetarian dumplings, which are vegan as well, I always get every single time. It's so good.
What makes those dumplings the ones you like? Because vegetable dumplings are, you can find them everywhere, but what makes these stand out to you?
Well, they're green, first off, so they just look really cool. And there's something about the filling and the sauce that they serve it with. It's not just the soy sauce. There's something else that's going on with it. I can't really tell, but it is mine and my husband's favorite dumplings everywhere.
Well, that sauce comes up all the time. We are going to have to look into that someday.
I think it probably has some chili oil and vinegar in it. And with those kind of dumplings, the sauce makes it, I think.
I think it has crack in it, too.
Any final words just about the direction of vegetarian food in Kansas City? Anyone?
I don't think it's a special thing. It's just a meal
where you don't
have meat. It's just not an issue
anymore.
Yep.
That's great to hear. Well, our time is up. Thanks so much to our food critics, Mary Black, Charles Ferruzza. This has been fun.
Thank you.
And Lisa Murphy, thank you so much for stopping by.
Thank you, Gina.
You can get our full list of best vegetarian meals in Kansas City at kcur.org/centralstandard. We'll have it ready for you later today. That's kcur.org/centralstandard. And if you follow KCUR on Facebook or follow us on Twitter, it'll come right to you. We are at KCURCST. This show is produced by Jen Chen, Coy Duggar, and Sylvia Maria Gross with lots of help from intern Trevor Hook. He's the one who went to the ship and had that veggie Cuban. Linda Scher runs the board for us every day, and our theme music is by Spoonbender Labs. I'm Gina Kaufman, and Up to Date is coming up around the corner. Have a great weekend, everyone.